you have the chance to win a Spring Super Sweeps from LAist. Donate $60 for one entry to win a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Check out all the other prizes too when you donate now at laist.com/sweeps.
Patrick Stewart, such a wonderful supporter of KPCC. And I just have to tell you that back in the Next Generation days, he was in for an interview and we were talking and he said, when I moved to Los Angeles to do the Next Generation, he said, I learned about the city by listening to Air Talk. And I've said that made me feel great that our program has been helpful to people who've moved from elsewhere to really learn Southern California and what it's all about. So, and from all the listeners who call in and share their sense of Southern California as well, as this is the biggest conversation in all of Southern California in size and in the number of years that we've been coming your way on Air Talk. So thank you for all of your support. It is deeply, deeply meaningful to me and all of us here working on your behalf at KPCC. And obviously an invaluable part of this has been our core of medical experts who join us on a daily basis. Dr. Peter Chin Hong of UC San Francisco appears weekly and has become hugely popular among Air Talk listeners. He's infectious disease specialist and professor of medicine at UCSF Medical Center. Dr. Chin Hong, so good to have you with us again today.
So great to be on, Larry, and I always look forward to speaking with you and to interacting with our Air Talk listeners, too.
Well, let's get right into some of the big news that's going on right now. We continue to see California statewide among the lowest numbers of COVID-19 cases in the country. This is tremendous news, although in some other states where we're seeing some increases, does that give you pause and concern for us here?
Yes, it does give me a little bit of pause. I mean, I feel like COVID is like the weather. I was thinking the other day, and right now the sun is shining in California, and I hope it continues to shine. But I'm worried about, first of all, it's definitely thunderstorming in Europe right now with lockdowns in Italy. Germany almost had a lockdown for Easter, extending Easter, but then they reversed that last minute. Belgium is undergoing some restrictions more deeply. And then in the U.S., the East Coast is kind of going upticking, and Michigan is kind of really where our hotspot is right now in the U.S. So I think with all of that, it just feels that it's cloudy here, and we just have to pay attention and to keep our guard up.
Well, and what do you think is going on? Because when I look at the numbers here and the percentage particularly of people in the most vulnerable group of 65 plus and how many have had at least one vaccine and how many have had both of their doses of Pfizer or Moderna, it looks like it would be rather difficult now for the virus to gain a toehold, at least in the most vulnerable population. So what's going on?
So I think what's going on is really mobility. As people get more mobile, that's happening in the U.S. spring break, and the young adult population hasn't been vaccinated yet. So it's almost like the same in 2020. But you're right, if we do see a surge, and many people think we'll see an uptick in numbers eventually, we don't know when, it will look very different. We won't see a run in the hospitals. We won't see a run in the ICU beds like we did before. But I think if cases go up in the community, you may see a pulling back a little bit on freedoms and outside, but probably not. I would be shocked if we get a lockdown again. And the most interesting thing and the aspect that I'm most fearful about is this long hauler syndrome. And, you know, we heard recently, for example, that the CEO of Texas Roadhouse committed suicide, sadly, because of tinnitus after he had COVID. And, you know, these kinds of symptoms I'm just worried about in the people who are asymptomatic or have mild infections.
Well, I hadn't heard about that. Terrible. Dr. Chin Hong, I know that there are parts of Europe, Spain most notably, I was reading about, where there's tremendous pent-up demand to get vaccinated. And even with some of the concerns, particularly there about AstraZeneca, apparently thousands of people have come out today in Madrid to get vaccinated because there, of course, they've seen a resurgence of the virus. How long is it going to take the EU to catch up to where the UK and the US are in vaccinations?
I think it's going to be some time. You know, they are going to be behind us by a few months. And now it's a really difficult time because they are seeing an increase in surges, which may end up being an increase in deaths again, because, again, they haven't been as good as we have with vaccinating even the most vulnerable. And a lot about Europe vaccination is a perfect storm, so to speak. So first of all, they banked a lot on AstraZeneca. It is a Swedish company with partnership with the Oxford, so all European companies. Then they bought a lot of it. And then now with Brexit, what's happening now is an interesting political issue with Europe being different from the UK and people kind of holding on to doses. Just today, I think there's a big snafu in Europe because, I think 29 million doses of AstraZeneca vaccines was found in an Italian storehouse. It sounds like a movie. And people are worried it was destined for Europe, and that because there's a discrepancy between how much was delivered and how much is actually getting into people's arms. So that's one issue. And then the bigger issue, as you pointed out, is people are hesitant because of the stories about clots, even though that's not proven at all.
Well, and then we have, of course, the word yesterday that, I think it was yesterday, that the U.S. panel that was looking at what's expected to be the forthcoming AstraZeneca application for emergency authorization, that they thought there was some fudging of the numbers and a using of outdated results from clinical trials in the U.S. Does that undermine either your confidence in AstraZeneca as a company? Secondly, does it, call into question the effectiveness of the vaccine in the world population now with the various variants?
I think the main issue at AstraZeneca is really one, and that's a PR nightmare. They've had some stumbles many times along the way. And this last instance was just another part of that sordid tale, because it was extremely, extremely irregular to have the NIH essentially give a statement around midnight on Monday after the Data Safety and Monitoring Board said that maybe they didn't count the numbers right. So essentially what happened is when they said efficacy in the overall 79%, they included more of the serious cases instead of a more inclusive outcome. So when statisticians look at this, it's probably going to be in the range of 70 to 74% effective instead of 79. So not a big difference, so to speak, and very similar to J&J. But I think the way that it unfolded is putting a lot of doubt, like you pointed out, Larry, in people's minds. And, it's just going to be a little bit scary to see what's going to happen. It is going to be the vaccine of the world. It's the cheapest one, and this is just not what we need at this time right now.
I forgot. Is AstraZeneca a single dose?
It's a double dose.
It's a double.
Only J&J is a single dose.
That's the only single. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. JSK asks on the page, 30% of the 65 plus haven't received even one dose, according to reporting today. Is that an access problem or a choice problem? JSK, I would just add before Dr. Chin Hong responds, when I look at the surveys of Americans, that doesn't surprise me that 30% have not received, because that looks pretty similar to me of those who've expressed reluctance to get vaccinated. Dr. Chin Hong, your thoughts about what we're seeing?
Yeah, I think where people are focusing in now on in the more vulnerable populations are just the access issue. And like you pointed out, Larry, it's not just about access, it's also about hesitancy. And I think some strategies people are using include just very door-to-door delivery of vaccines to people, maybe they're bed bound. You know, I know one of my colleagues who had a father who's bed bound, so he couldn't really go out to get his vaccine. So it would be very difficult. So people like that would be in that percentage. So I think after the first huge outpouring of vaccines and the able can get it, then I think we have to focus on the people like that, the hesitant folks, to try and figure out why they might be hesitant. And then the folks who just couldn't get up to go, the folks who don't have a computer to make appointments, that's the crossing the T's that we'll have to do as a country eventually.
Yeah, 866-893-5722 or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. It's a chance for you to ask questions of our noted guest, expert Dr. Peter Chin Hong, UC San Francisco Medical Center. He's professor. 866-893-KPECC. Jeffrey in Beverly Hills, who I think might be the same Jeffrey, always calls in with interesting things about movies. He said, I'm contemplating a holiday get-together with my family. There'll be three vaccinated adults and one unvaccinated teenager. Wondering if any precautions would be necessary for this get-together.
So Jeffrey has a great question and one that will come up time and time again as we try to get back to normal. So if you look at Jeffrey's situation, you know, if you consider the unvaccinated teenager to be one household and everybody else is vaccinated, it actually is going to be fine from CDC guidance. Again, unvaccinated people in a modest configuration in a household can visit one other household of unvaccinated people if they are at low risk of getting bad COVID.
So presumably if the unvaccinated teenager has no underlying health issues, making him or her particularly vulnerable, Jeffrey, it sounds like a wonderful visit. Thanks so much. We'll continue with Dr. Peter Chin Hong momentarily. You're listening to Air Talk on KPECC. I'm Larry Mantle with Dr. Peter Chin Hong, part of our KPECC family of medical experts. He's at UC San Francisco Medical Center, an infectious disease specialist and professor of medicine as well. If you have questions for Dr. PCH, our phone line's open at 866-893-5722. You can post on the Air Talk Facebook page. You can tweet at Air Talk, or you can post on our Air Talk page at kpecc.org. Dr. Chin Hong, let's talk a bit about what's happening with vaccine eligibility, because there are some counties here that have made it easier for people under age 65 to get vaccinated by expanding either the list of underlying conditions, making one eligible, or we've seen in a number of other states like Arizona right next door, Nevada is going to this shortly, where essentially everybody 16 and up is going to be eligible to be able to get vaccinated. So your thoughts about that, and you think that causes more problems because of the clogged appointment process, or do you think it makes sense to open it up more widely?
I think it definitely makes sense to opening up more widely, Larry, and I'm hoping for that day to come soon to California as a state. I think we're going to be laggards from the rest of the country, and I think we have vaccine FOMO because, you know, like you pointed out, Alaska, West Virginia, Michigan, all of these are expanded already to over 16. And we haven't yet, mainly because we're more complex. We're the most populous state. We have so much heterogeneity and payers. You know, Blue Shield is still, taking over distribution slowly over different counties. So we're in this process of transition. And just it's a supply issue at the end of the day. So it's hard to compare California to these smaller, less populous states and less complex healthcare systems. But again, it does make us feel weird when we look at the neighbors and you can get one vaccine one place, you can't get it another place. And even within counties, you can have type 1 diabetes in San Diego and get the vaccine. But if you go to another county and you have type 1 diabetes and not type 2, you can't get the vaccine because it's not on the list. So you know, that heterogeneity is just unsettling to a lot of people.
Dr. Chin Hong, you've been very helpful to me when I've read stories I haven't really understood. And here's one from the New York Times, headlined, "Vaccinated people can get COVID, but it's most likely very rare." And it goes on to cite a number of health facilities, close to us right here, UC San Diego Health, David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA, and showing that just a minuscule amount of medical professionals have ended up getting COVID after having been vaccinated, particularly after getting both of the vaccines. But I'm confused because we know during, you know, the clinical trials, the efficacy was, you know, around 95% for Moderna and for Pfizer. So why are we seeing what's a more than 99% effectiveness in these healthcare settings?
Yeah, it's really interesting because I think there are other aspects of being a healthcare worker that give you another layer of protection. So the numbers actually look better in the healthcare worker environment. So like you pointed out, in that David Geffen, UCLA and San Diego study, they looked at 15,000 healthcare workers who got the vaccine. 2 weeks after the vaccine, only seven people got ended up being positive. So that's like much better than the trials. And none of them, as we expected, got sick or got hospitalized with COVID. It was just mainly detected. When you look at countries and studies like Israel, from their studies, it more mirrors regular society. And in that case, it's still better than the trials. It's above 95% effective in the society at large. So I think, you know, it's good news from that aspect. And it also means that, well, first of all, there are 2 points. The first point is you can still get COVID even if you got the vaccine, but just not very, very rarely. And then number two is vaccines are just one strategy. So, for example, in healthcare, if everybody's wearing a mask all the time in a well-ventilated setting, most of their work, it's going to be even more protection.
And presumably people who are healthcare professionals are taking more precautions at home, when they're out in the world, other things which could give much greater effectiveness. I also wondered whether there was a difference in testing, and you may not be familiar with to what degree they were testing the healthcare employees at UCLA or at UCSD, but I was wondering if there was more testing in the clinical trials, so it uncovered more asymptomatic COVID there than perhaps was uncovered at the medical centers. But if they were doing testing to the same degree as the clinical trials, then that wouldn't be an issue.
That's a very astute point, Larry. It's not only the frequency or the periodicity of testing. So the more you test, the more you're likely going to pick up something. And you're right, it probably was more systematic in the trials versus in a healthcare setting. Just speaking for UCSF, you test, you know, if you want to get tested right now, it's not necessarily routine. And you may not uncover all of the real COVID. So it may be an overestimate of the efficacy of the vaccines. But I think right on in terms of not having people get sick enough to be hospitalized. And the type of test also matters. So if you use a less sensitive test, like what was used in the Rose Garden event, the antigen test as a one-time test is going to be less sensitive than a PCR test that in picking up COVID.
A couple of flu-related questions in our 2 minutes we have left, one of which is that we see a decreasing number of cases of COVID-19 among people who've been vaccinated, I should say, have received their flu shots. And secondly, people concerned whether with kids going back to school, teachers back, whether we're going to see a tough flu season. Let's take the vaccine first. One of the things I was thinking is, well, maybe that's because it's a self-selecting group. The sorts of people that get a flu shot are going to be much more cautious, more fully masked, do those kinds of things, making them at less risk of COVID. So that's why it's associated. It's not that the flu shot gave any more protection. But what do you think?
I agree. I mean, I think there are two things going on, and this was a Michigan study, I think, that was quoted, which showed, first of all, there's a modest benefit, like 24% less likely to get COVID if you got the flu shot. So I think the most important point driving this decrease is probably behavior, and the people likely to get the flu shot are the people who will also take more precautions in the rest of life to prevent them from getting COVID. But also, interestingly, this effect of getting one other kind of vaccine to prevent COVID is a really interesting phenomenon. We've been seeing it with the MMR vaccine. Oh. And with the MMR, there's some sort of similarity with rubella and COVID. So maybe there's cross-reactivity or training of the immune system when you get one vaccine to help with COVID. So people are not really sure, but it's very, very intriguing.
Yeah, yeah. And are you concerned about that we could have a rough flu season coming up?
Yes, I think I'm concerned about, you know, we may get back, you know, I didn't have a cold, knock on wood, and many of us didn't for the whole season, which was a big relief. And we may get back some of those respiratory viruses, which are more common with touching things, you know, less, not like COVID, but, you know, you can get one of the 300 respiratory viruses that cause a common cold in that way, and flu as well.
Given the choice, I'll take the cold, but hopefully we avoid hopefully we avoid it all. Dr. Chin Hong, always a pleasure. Thank you, sir, for being with us. We appreciate it very much, and we look forward to talking with you next week, and hopefully the news continues to improve week by week.
I hope so too, Larry. Talk to you soon.
All right, Dr. Peter Chin Hong, infectious disease specialist, professor of medicine, UC San Francisco Medical Center, joining us regularly here on Air Talk on KPECC.
The LAS Spring Super Sweeps is happening now. You can win amazing prizes while supporting your source for local fact-based journalism. One lucky grand prize winner will get to choose a brand new Lexus or $25,000 in cash. Other prizes include an electric bike from Juice Bikes and $1,000 gas gift cards. Your donation of $60 gets you one entry to win. And the more you give, the more entries you get. Donate now at las.com/sweeps.